Could you tell us, please, when and where you were born, and what was your name at birth?
I was born in Warsaw, and my name at birth was Halina Lewiner, L-E-W-I-N-E-R.
Thank you. And when did you come here to Scotland?
I came to Scotland for this permanent residence on the 9th of December, 1947. But I had been here before.
Oh, right.
I see.
Yes, I'd been here just before the war.
What age were you when you came in 1947?
18.
18. So, continuing from what you were just saying, why did you come here to Scotland and how was it possible?
Well, I came here with my parents. And my mother had a sister in Glasgow. And her sister and her husband made great efforts to get us over, my mother, my father, and myself, to Glasgow, because the situation in Poland was getting a bit untenable. The communist regime was encroaching. Various friends of ours got arrested for days at a time, and a lot of them left Poland, but they didn't go officially because they couldn't. They had no relatives like we had, and they just went across the illegal border to Czechoslovakia, to Germany. But we were lucky because we had actual genuine relatives who sent us actual genuine visas. And that's how we got here.
And where did you stay? Did you stay with your sister at first?
Yes, we stayed with my mother's sister for a while, but we moved out after a few months.
And did your family find work here?
My father found a job, a very lowly job, of course. Very poorly paid, but a job nevertheless. And my mother tried to make a living out of dressmaking, but it just didn't click because she was too high a class of dressmaker and she couldn't really compete with the ready-mades. And she didn't get enough of the higher class of customer. She had a few, very pleased with her, but she couldn't expand because she had no backing, really. So, but she did managed to make a few pounds here and there with dressmaking.
What were your impressions of Scotland?
Well, I had already been before, you see, and I was a great Scottish patriot, and I was so delighted that Poland, I was a Polish patriot as well, but I was so delighted that Poland and Scotland had some connection through the mother of Bonnie Prince Charlie, who was a Polish princess, and I'd known this since I was nine. Thrills. I loved it here. When I was going away back to Poland, my school friends clubbed together to give me tartan presents. Before the war, we came because my auntie, my mother's sister, was pregnant and she had a little boy and she felt that she could do with her sister's company. Mm-hmm. My father didn't come then, just myself and my mother. And after a month, they decided that they had enough of me under their feet and they sent me to school. Mm-hmm. So I went to Shawlands Academy for about 5 months and I learned English beautifully without the slightest trace of an accent, which I'm afraid is not the case now.
So you think you've lost your good Scottish accent?
I had a good Scottish accent and what's more, I could read and write with perfect spelling. I know that because my aunt kept my letters and I found them after, of course, still got them after the war, and I spelt words like cot and wood perfectly.
Very good.
So
they're not,
I think,
the
I was
easiest.
Brilliant.
And you would be what, about 14?
No, I was nine at that
nine?
Time. Nine. I had my 10th birthday in Glasgow.
So
and we went back to Poland. Mm-hmm. We stayed 6 months in Glasgow and then we travelled a bit in England and in France. And then we left France on the 14th of July, back to Poland, just after the celebrations, 14th of July, and back to Poland, and 6 weeks later the war broke out.
Your father must have been quite worried, though.
He was, that's why we went back partially, mm-hmm. because he kept writing, what are you doing there? And I'm lonely, come back. So this was part of the motivation, there were other reasons why I went back. My mother didn't intend to stay here really, but because she had a thriving dressmaking business near Warsaw, in a small town where we lived near Warsaw, And but my uncle, war was in the air. We listened to Hitler's speeches on the radio, and the radio nearly jumped off the shelf because he was so loud, and the Heil Hitlers and everything. And the barrage balloons floated over Belahouston Park, and they were practicing with, what do you call them, the lights.
The lights, the anti-aircraft lights.
Yes, and they intercepted aircraft. So we knew war was on its way, but we just didn't believe, we didn't quite believe it. And my mother just couldn't make up her mind, but finally she said, no, I'll go home. So I went home. But my mother had an idea. At least she had two ideas, which she chased. She chased both the ideas, quite different ideas, but she chased them both. My mother was very energetic. One was to get to Vilna, which was in a neutral country then. Lithuania was still a neutral country, was not absorbed either by Germany or by Russia. And from Lithuania, you could apply for a visa to Britain or to America. Lots of people went. And my mother said to herself, we'll be in Vilna, we'll wire Auntie Hannah, and she'll promptly send us visas, and we'll go to Britain. On the other hand, she had a sister in Moscow, because this sister emigrated to Moscow in the 1920s, early 1920s. If I go into it all, it's a long story, but she wanted to get an education. In Poland, she couldn't get an education because she was too poor. And in Russia, just after the communists won, after the Bolshevik Revolution, education was open to all. And she was longing for an education. So she went. Actually, my mother's brother went even earlier. So she went to join her brother. And she was in Russia. And after a while, and she couldn't come back to Poland. They wouldn't let her out in the first place. So she did keep up a correspondence with my mother and her own father, but after a while, about 1938, the correspondence stopped. There was nothing. So my mother wanted to see both her brother and her sister in Moscow. So she started applying to the various institutions, various offices of the Russian authorities, and one authority sent her to another. We don't deal with it, go to that office. We don't deal with it, go to that office. And she went like this in a circular motion until one official took pity on her and said, look, citizeness, you will never get permission to go to Moscow. So forget about it. How long have you not seen your sister? 18 years? Well, if you haven't seen her for 18 years, you don't have to see her at all. So that was the Russian approach. In fact, later on, we discovered that my uncle, the brother, was no longer alive. He was arrested in 1937 in the big purges, and he was shot in the cellars of the prison. So there was no point. And my auntie was afraid to write about him, but it was later, during our stay in Russia, that we discovered all this. So, and oh yes, and you want to know how we got into Russia. Well, in 1940, by then there was no question of Lithuania, because Lithuania was absorbed by Russia, annexed Lithuania. So that path was closed to us. Couldn't go to Moscow. And there was a chance to register for a return back to your own home. The Russians declared you just must register either to receive Soviet passports or to go home. My father decided, when we were still living separately, he decided that he would like to go back to Warsaw. He was fed up with Russia and being forever arrested, forever let out, forever prosecuted. He'd rather stay at home. Whatever happened with everybody will happen to him. But my mother was still having this dream of going to Moscow, so she applied for a Russian passport, and I was on it. So when the NKVD came for us in the night, I forget which date, in June in 1940, they said to my mother, well, we'll have to take your husband away, but you and the girl can stay. But my mother suddenly became very brave, and she says, wherever my husband goes, I go. And that's how we got transported by cattle trucks a journey of about 12 days into far Russia, the northern parts of Russia. And that's how we did not get put into gas chambers or shot by the Germans.
So, in other words, your father, who had said he wanted to go back to Poland, he ended up being Russian or made into a Russian citizen like your mother?
Well, not as we never became citizens.
No.
It was also a very difficult fight not to become citizen. But because my mother decided to go with him, myself and my mother and I were saved. Had we decided to stay, which was quite easy because it was comfortable to stay, we were going into the unknown. Had we decided to stay, had my mother decided for the two of us to stay, my father would have been taken away and we would have been shot by the Germans in due course.
Mm-hmm. So was it Siberia you ended up in?
Well, it used to be known as Siberia because it was a place where politicals used to be deported. But it wasn't actually Siberia. Geographically, it's still Europe. It's near Archangel.
Oh,
up
goodness,
north.
Up north.
Yes.
Near Japan, then?
No. Near Finland more.
Near Finland.
Yes.
So how long were you there?
Well, in the Archangel area, we were about a year and a half. And then, while we were there, the Germans attacked Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were the detainees, before the attack, once the attack happened, we were allies. Suddenly we became allies. So from not being able to go out of the settlement any further than a 5 kilometers radius, we were suddenly told we could go anywhere we liked, to do anything we liked. So, and by then my auntie, my Moscow auntie, had been evacuated to another place called Bashkiria, which was near the Urals, which was almost in Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
And all the inmates of this settlement near Archangel were going to go out, or they had enough of that very cold place where they were forced to do laboring in the forests and so on. They were going to go somewhere where some food was short and it was cold. They were going to go somewhere where there was food and it was warm. So they all went to the Central Asia, except my mother and me, because we knew where we were going. We were going to Bashkiria to join my auntie from Moscow.
And it must have been bitterly cold, I would imagine.
It was bitterly cold, yes. Both places.
Mm-hmm.
Near Archangel, the temperature could go down to minus 55.
Ooh.
Goodness,
that's
cold.
Well, that's
but we lived in a valley, so there was no wind.
Mm-hmm.
So it was bearable, just
mm-hmm.
about bearable. But in Bashkiria, we were living in the steppe, and the temperature went also, minus 40 was quite common. Usually it was minus 25, minus 26.
It was a horrible cold wind.
There was a wind, yes, and sometimes it would whip up the snow, whirling snow everywhere. There were memorable 2 days while we were there, where the temperature dropped to minus 65.
Oh,
my goodness.
You couldn't go out in a temperature.
No,
like
you
that,
couldn't,
could
but you
be?
Had to, because you had to go to the bathroom. You didn't have a lavatory in the house.
Did you get an education there?
Oh, yes.
There?
The first thing I did was to go back to school. Well, to begin with, there was no school in the... in the Archangel settlement, when we got there, to begin with, there was no school for the children. The men were required to go tree felling, lumberjacking in the forest. The women and the various other able-bodied people had jobs. My father was over 50. He was not required to fell trees, but he was required to be out bonfires out of the branches. He and a 16-year-old boy, they quite enjoyed it. But after a while, he was taken away and dragged away to jail. That's another long story.
I thought you were all on the same side by that point. Why was he jailed?
Well, long before the revolution, and even after the revolution for a bit, he was politically engaged. And in fact, he was deported in exile in the same areas near Archangel by the Tsar. And he got detention for 2 years without a trial. They didn't have enough evidence against him, but they did want him out of Warsaw. So without a trial, he was given 3 years of detention in that place which was known as Siberia, but was actually near Archangel. And he spent a very interesting 3 years there. He was imprisoned with the wife of Trotsky, first wife of Trotsky, and various other well-known personalities. And I've got a photograph, which we always had in the family. And when Trotsky's biography came out in pictures, on page 8, there was the photo with my father in it.
But he was with Trotsky, was he not a communist then? Was he
my
not
father, no, he wasn't a communist. He was a Bundist. I don't know whether you know what a Bundist is.
That's the German Jewish.
No, not German. It was called the Bund of the Jewish Workers of Russia, Lithuania, and Poland.
I see, not German.
Bund simply means a union.
Right.
And it was an organization which was non-Zionist, but nationalistic, and wanted to have. It wanted to have better conditions for Jewish workers, of whom there were a lot. So material conditions, but also a cultural autonomy for Jews. In other words, the Jewish institutions should flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Secular, it was a non-religious either. Mm-hmm. It was anti-religious, anti-Zionist, but pro-workers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a socialist organization.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very active in it when he was young, but the activity sort of tailed off.
Mm.
But the Russians didn't forget about it.
Mm.
And that's why he was harassed while we were in the occupied Polish part.
Mm.
That's why he wanted to go back, because they harassed him. And then when we were in detention up north, someone tipped off, I've got it all written up, you know, somewhere. There was a bit of an uprising in the settlement. The young men protested that they're working and they don't get enough to eat, and they don't want any money, they want food for themselves, for their children. Well, the Russians considered this as a revolt, and these young people were all arrested. But one of them seems to have said to the interrogating officer, "Oh, you're arresting us. We used to be communists in Poland, and there's this Bundist, and you haven't touched him."
Mm-hmm.
So they went and touched my father too, dragged him in.
And so was there a big age difference between your father and your mother?
Pardon?
Was there an age difference between your father and your mother?
Yes, my mother was 8 years younger.
So when
my father came back from the detention in Russia under the Tsar, he was 26. And he met my mother, and my mother looked at him and she thought, oh, a hero of the revolution. And she thought he was wonderful. He was quite good looking too. So they got engaged. No, he was 28, because my mother was 20 when they got married. 8 years between them.
But
yeah.
So there you are, stuck in Russia. And how did you manage to get to Scotland?
Once the war was between Russia and Germany was underway, there was a Polish government in exile in Britain, and this Polish government in exile demanded of the Russian government to allow all the Polish citizens on the territory of Russia who were in detention, who were in jail, to be allowed out. So my father was allowed out of jail. Not only that, but he was, jail officials thought he was a VIP, and they conveyed him to Moscow in a VIP manner. He didn't know what happened to him.
Mm.
There he was, starving and dirty and everything. And there he was in a first-class carriage going to Moscow. And any desire of his was fulfilled. And we were allowed out from the detention. We didn't know where my father was by then. We didn't know where he was. Because he did write from the prison, but after a while he stopped writing. But they managed to put us together. And we went, as I say, we went to Bashkiria. And after, but when the war was coming to the end, that was about 4 years later, there was talk about the repatriation of the Polish citizens. And that's when we were very glad that we never took. My mother just forgot her passport. She didn't think about that my father didn't take a passport. Because every time they asked us, "Why don't you become Soviet citizens?" He would say, "Well, we can't, because we can't have dual nationality, and I don't want to relinquish Polish nationality." "Oh, you're Polish, well, prove it." So he kept doling out little documents, whatever he had, to show he was Polish. So at least they knew we were Polish. And it was there was a rumor that we were going to be repatriated, which we eventually were, to Poland. And from Poland, at the beginning, soon after the war, Poland was still reasonably democratic. So we could communicate with my Auntie Hannah here. When I say we, I also mean my parents, because I was just a child, really.
Right, and they eventually arranged for her to get your visa to come,
yes,
come here?
Yes,
oh, and that's where
we came legitimately here, yes, without any trouble. Well, without any excessive trouble.
Can we take you back? You went back to Poland, obviously, very dangerous time.
Yes.
What happened after that?
Well, we got to Poland, and we reoccupied our flat, and on the 1st of September, that's, you had it on the 3rd, but here we had it on the 1st, on a Friday. Bombs fell in our backyard practically, and we discovered that the war started, because the night before it was, the atmosphere was electric with war, war, war. And my father says, ah, there will be no war. I'm sure the talks are going on somewhere to stop the nonsense. Well, during the night, the war was declared. We didn't know because we didn't have a radio at the time. Our radio had been broken. So we only knew when the bombs fell. And it was a German bomber, and he just saw the bombs in our back garden. And of course, panic and all kinds of things happened. And my father left the house on the 9th of September. There was a kind of panic among people still don't know exactly what happened, but what we were aware of is that the main road from Warsaw out to east was absolutely full of people walking with bundles and suitcases, some on bicycles and the odd car here and there, the odd horse-driven vehicle, but mostly on foot, and it was like a river of people going along. And my father was sitting in the garden, and my mother says, what's this? What are all these people doing? And he says, well, I don't know. The weather's lovely. I'm not going anywhere. But my mother said, look, they're going. You go. You never know. It must be important. So she put some underwear and some sandwiches into his briefcase and sent him. And he went. Luckily, he was a good walker. Well, later, we heard what happened on the road. And we don't know why these people went. Most of them were young people. And a lot of them were Jews, not all, but most of them were Jews, really. And the rumor was that the government in Warsaw, the rulers of Warsaw, decided that there's no point in trying to keep the Germans out of Warsaw, better to go to the east and form a new army in eastern Poland. That was one theory. But we don't know, because we didn't hear. And to this day, there is no settled theory why these people went.
But you must have, or I would imagine, your parents understood well that Hitler was going to be very dangerous for Jewish people.
Oh, of course they knew. I mean, my auntie who brought us here, she had lived in Germany until 1936. Mm. And she came over here on almost en route to Canada. But while she was in Britain, in Leeds, she met her husband. And that was it. So we knew all right that things were happening. But we didn't know how bad it was. The idea was that they'll arrest people for I forget my words. Keep them in case something happens.
Detention?
You know,
under supervision?
When you want the word
hostages.
Hostages, yes. Oh, and that if there was any outrage against the Germans, every tenth would be shot. Mm. Every tenth. That would be lucky, because every 9 out of 10 were killed. Anyway, so my father, who was already in his 50s then, decided he'd go. And about a month later, my mother decided she couldn't. And the Germans had already stepped into the town. They occupied it. After battles and bombings and all kinds of things that happened, we watched Warsaw being bombed for 2 weeks. And because we were just outside of Warsaw. And my mother felt the weight of the German occupation, because the janitor of our flat, suddenly stopped calling her Mrs. Leviner. Just called her Leviner.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And also she was in a queue for bread, and there were people saying to the Germans who were watching the queue, "This is a Jew, take him out of here." You know, she had to make sure that she had rations for bread, coal and so on. But everywhere, the local Poles were worse than the Germans. I'm not saying they were all like that, but there were enough of them to cause trouble, because
mm-hmm.
they were anti-Semitic, well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother decided, oh, I'm not staying here anymore. And she managed to organize an escape for us, for the two of us. We traveled with a young man who had been in this small place near Warsaw. The place is called Otwock, so I'll refer to it as Otwock. It was a holiday resort, but people went there to be treated for TB. It was supposed to be a wonderful place to get treatment for TB. The weather the air was pure and the weather was usually very even and so on. And this young man was 25 and he was going home with his nurse. And his home was in Vilna. So my mother joined them, and it was a droshky. Don't know whether you know what a droshky is.
Not a horse. And
it's a horse-drawn carriage, but it's very comfortable. You know, it's like this settee, and there are seats facing this way and seats facing that way. And of course the young man with his nurse sat there, and my mother and I sat facing backwards. But there was enough room to take sufficient luggage, and it was rather uneventful, our travel. But on the way, we saw the carcasses of dead horses and broken cars and broken bicycles. And this was the leftover of that original exodus. It was shot at by low-flying German planes, and they had to hide in the surrounding woods. And after a while, they didn't walk by day, only by night. And by day, they hid in the woods. And my father had a hole in his briefcase where a shrapnel or something would have killed him if it wasn't for his briefcase. And there were lots of bodies on the way, but I suppose the surrounding peasants or something must have given them a decent burial, because we didn't see any dead bodies, but we saw dead horses and broken down cars which ran out of petrol. There was nowhere to get petrol. And if the horse was shot from under a horse-drawn carriage, we couldn't do anything else about it. And bicycles, various things like that, on the way. And we stayed in peasant huts overnight. And at one point we were chased by a German patrol, and luckily our driver, who was a bit deaf, we made him stop, and the Germans came over to us and they started pulling us out of the carriage.
Mm-hmm.
And someone knew, I think the nurse knew German, and she says, "Ein Kranker, don't touch him because he's ill." But they were still pulling us, and my mother decided to pretend that they wanted her gloves, so she let them pull her gloves off. But another, an older German came, and he came, "Lass sie, leave them alone, let them go." So they let us go.
And did you know what had happened to your father by then?
Well, we had rumours. It's amazing. He would send a message. There were no post or telephone.
Mm-hmm.
But someone would be coming back and would let someone else know that Leviner was seen in Brest or in Rovno or in any of these towns. So my mother thought she'd find him all right.
Mm-hmm.
We went for Bialystok, my mother and I. My father had friends everywhere, because before the war he was an agent for a publishing firm, and he used to place book orders, especially among the intelligentsia and among institutions like libraries or schools. So he had lots of friends there. So in Bialystok we found someone where we could at least have a corner, because the place was overrun with refugees.
Mm.
It was absolutely impossible to stick a needle anywhere. The flat we were in, he was a manufacturer, And you had a big flat by Bialystok standards, 4 rooms, kitchen and bathroom. And in these 4 rooms, there were never less than 16 people. That's together.
People.
Family were just himself, his wife and a little boy. And luckily my father knew him, and that's why we could get in there. But my father couldn't. There was just room for me and my mother. And my father found another accommodation on a table. In other words, he would spread his bedding on the table, and in the morning he'd roll it up and put it under the table.
And you'd met him there then?
Yes, we met him within a few days of arriving. I can't remember, maybe the following day. It was quite easy because people, you know, passed on the news, his wife was there. And we eventually moved out just outside of Bialystok, my mother and I, because my mother was hoping to do some sewing. But the move was wonderful for me. It was a very severe winter. It was, the ice was absolutely covering the ground and the snow and everything. But I got going to school. I was always keen to go to school. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a choice of different language schools, because the Russians had just stepped in and they were the idealistic communists and they were going to encourage expression of ethnic cultures. So they allowed various schools, and in fact encouraged various schools to flourish. So there was a school where the language of instruction was Yiddish, and one in which Polish was the main language. Then there was a Belarus and a Russian. So I had a choice of 4. And I said to my mother, I want to go to the Yiddish school. I've never been to a Yiddish school, but I wanted to go to the Yiddish school. And it was a most wonderful school with very devoted teachers. And I learned Yiddish, learned to read Yiddish and write Yiddish, and some science in Yiddish as well.
That'd be very handy in wood farms, then.
Oh, yes. But yeah, well, there was a lesson I could pass on. It was about convection. The teacher took a candle and held it high up in the open door, and the flame pointed out. And he held it down below the bottom of the door, and the flame pointed in. So he says, you see, cold air comes in, gets warmed and goes up and comes out of the door. Convection.
Why were you so keen in Scotland?
I don't know, I was just the kind of girl who was enthusiastic about countries.
So when you came here, were your dreams met or were you disappointed?
No, I wasn't disappointed. It was a different situation. I was now an adult, and my aim was to study, and I did go to study. The friends I made, it was more difficult to make friends when you're older. I found that I just didn't understand the mores and the way of going about things here, and it took me a few years, but I was very happy on the whole, yes.
And did you meet and mix with the Jewish community here?
Well, to a certain extent, my auntie made sure that I met some young Jewish people, and they took me to various things. But there was a young Zionist organization, and I went to their meetings, and various birthday parties and things like that. But I was strange. I was out of my milieu, and nobody particularly made too much of an effort of the community. They didn't make much of an effort to draw me in.
We've heard that from other people.
Yes.
I think that was a common experience. What about the refugees themselves? Did you know about the refugee centre?
I heard that there was a refugee organisation, but my parents were really the people who would be interested in things like that. I had my university interests, and besides, we felt that they were probably more for the German incomers than for us. We didn't feel we were refugees, we felt we were asylum seekers.
That's quite interesting, you know, that you even then differentiated.
Yes, we were not, we hadn't come here before the war escaping, or even afterward, escaping the horrors, because we escaped the horrors in Russia. But we did come because of the political situation, so we were asylum seekers.
And what did you study at university?
I did an ordinary degree, which is not brilliant, but physics, science in general, mm-hmm. but physics mm-hmm. in particular, and maths.
That sounds hard to me. And how were you able to fund it at the time?
Funding? Uh-huh. That was difficult because to begin with, I thought I would never get any funding. My relatives were not all that keen to fund me. My mother would have done anything for me. My father was barely earning a living. And someone tipped me off that the Glasgow Corporation gave grants to students. And to begin with, we didn't quite believe it. Mm. But when I applied, lo and behold, I was successful. So I was funded for the 3 years that I was there.
That's excellent.
Uh-huh.
And after you left university, did you begin work straight away?
I became a teacher. I went to teacher training college to Jordanville, and I got a job straight away.
Mm-hmm. And so where did you teach? Can you remember?
Yes. My first appointment was in Kelvinside. North Kelvinside Secondary School.
I taught there for a week.
Did you? Oh, well, maybe my... Did you not find any traces of me there? For a few months, anyway, my first year. Then I taught at St. George's Road.
Maryhill?
Yes, mm-hmm. almost Maryhill. And then I was married. To begin with, I didn't teach anywhere, but then I had to earn some money because things were tough. Mm-hmm. So I went to teach in Kings Park Secondary School. And then I had another short job in Battlefield Junior Secondary School. And after each of these jobs, I had to have a rest because it was very hard. But after each rest, I realized if I don't go and make some money, I'll have no clothes to wear, or the children have no clothes to wear. Because my husband was a teacher as well. And while he was brilliant and he was hardworking, but teacher's pay was very low. So the next job I had was in Eastwood, but I taught Russian there for 5 years. I was a qualified teacher, but not qualified to teach Russian, mm-hmm. but I knew enough Russian to teach it. Mm-hmm. So they got a qualified teacher who was also qualified in French, which I wasn't, so I had to go. And then I decided to take a proper permanent job, which was in Wood Farm High School in East Renfrewshire. I stopped there 30 years ago nearly. No, 25 mm-hmm. years ago.
And you taught science there?
I stopped maths. In my the first tranche of my teaching, I did teach science. Mm-hmm. But I find science was a dirty job. Mm-hmm. In what sense? You had to handle equipment. Mm-hmm. And I've had more cuts on my hands than you couldn't imagine. And they were always full of sulfur...
Sulfuric acid? No.
Copper sulfate. Mm. And copper sulfate is blue and gets under your nails, difficult to get out. And Vaseline was another dirty... And my overalls were burnt through wherever the acid fell. So I said, no more...
Mm. Yes,
Bunsen burners.
You wouldn't be allowed to do any of that nowadays. Health and safety would stop
you.
And everybody would be wearing covers on their
eyes. Well, not then.
No, absolutely
now
not.
Now they do, but not then. There was a period when they could do anything if they could get hold of the equipment. In fact, they were delighted if something went wrong. Because, we'll get compensation. But after that, I think the health and safety came in, mm-hmm. and now they're supposed to be doing experiments, but they must be goggled and gloves.
So how did you meet your husband?
I met him at a student dance, Glasgow Jewish Student Society dance. I was a wee bit too old for it. I was already out of university by mm-hmm. then. But my mother insisted that I go, because I had just finished with one boyfriend, mm-hmm. and I was a wee bit low. And I said, I'm not going. Yes, you're going. So I went, and there was my husband, mm-hmm. future husband, and he was sort of a bit forlorn there as well.
It's
a story
nice.
Really about him, because, do I tell you the full story?
Oh, yes.
Well, it's connected with Hannah and Lionel Levy. Well, they were looking for a suitable bride for Hannah's brother, Morris. And when they saw me, they thought, oh. And they started following me around the dance floor. You know, whenever I was, Morris would come and want to dance with me. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't fancy him.
Uh-huh.
So I kept escaping. Finally, Lino, who knew Izzy, said to him, look, you, there's a damsel in distress, go and rescue her, but don't tell my wife.
Really? That's very nice.
Yeah, so he came about 15 minutes before the end of the dance, and that's how we met.
That's
really
nice.
Very nice.
And you had 2 children?
Three children. Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Son as well. I've got a son as well. At the time I had my reasons. Mm-hmm. I was the one who decided these things. I said, look, the Jewish people lost a third, so we've got to replace them, which means that we have to have 3 children. But on the other hand, we can't have any more because the world's getting overpopulated, so we have to restrain ourselves.